Manx Radio's 2016 election coverage.
And this hour on the programme, we're continuing our coverage in the build-up to this year's House of Keys general election with the first of two 2016 election candidate interviews. We're joined now by Karen Angela, who's standing in Douglas North. Good afternoon, Karen, and welcome to the programme.
Good afternoon, Stu.
It's good to see you, because I know you've not been feeling too well, so thank you very much indeed for coming in. To people who don't know you, just tell us a bit about yourself and your background.
I've been self-employed since I was 20. I've been an employer since I was 20, self-employed since I was 26, worked in petrol retail for 29 years. I was turning over just short of 3 million on the forecourt 20 years ago.
Wow.
And I then thought I'd take semi-retirement and take on a sub-post office for 12 years. I've lived in Douglas for 12 years. And for the last 4 years, I've been a Douglas Borough councillor in Athol Ward.
Good. OK. And, I mean, how has that prepared you, do you think, for national politics, if at all?
I believe it's showed that there is a lack of communication between government and local commissioners and the council. The projects that we've been working on, trying to get through, and then you find we can't go any further because we've got to wait for permission from the Department of Infrastructure. And
okay. It
really makes you feel like them and us.
Just thinking through this, so 4 years ago you stood to be a councillor in Douglas. I bet you went into the job with all sorts of ideals about how you were going to change the world and stuff and how you were going to make a difference. I'm wondering whether or not when you actually were elected, you realised that it wasn't going to be that easy. And I wonder whether or not that might translate into standing for MHK. At the moment, you're full of ideas and things that you want to do.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that they are all achievable objectives?
You would like to see in the ideal world that they are achievable, but you know that this government machine turns over so slowly,
yeah. It
is extremely frustrating. I think what they need is a new breed in there.
Well, definitely. It looks as though there are going to be an awful lot of new MHKs this time, because a lot of the experienced hands have said that they're not going to stand again. Is that going to be a problem, though? If, you know, it's all very well said, it's great to get some new blood in there, but it'll take time, surely, for that to bed in.
It will, but I think there's also a lot of scaremongering about, you know, we need to keep some experienced ones in.
Yeah.
So which experienced ones are going to stay in, and are they the right ones? Sometimes, I mean, when you're running your own business, you're looking at all aspects for the greater good, for the end result. And you're looking at the way government's functioning and thinking, you're not looking at the whole picture here.
Yeah. It's a fairly onerous responsibility being an MHK. And you said that, you know, you were looking some time ago to go into sort of semi-retirement. I mean, I know it's not right for a gentleman to ask a lady her age, but you're over 50. Let's put it that way.
I am.
So, you know, are you convinced that you've got the energy to do this?
I believe as you get older, you learn. And the knowledge you have is what's needed. Yes, it's good to see younger people in politics, but I find they're more full of the great ideals, and it needs the older person in there to calm them down. A team should be comprised of different age groups, not all the same.
Well, you talk about different age groups, you're also talking about different genders, I think, and you think that the balance of power is wrong in that there aren't enough female MHKs.
There aren't. I mean, you think over 50% of the island's electorate are female, and yet we have one
right
in there, and we did have two.
What and I apologise, I've still got this chest infection, so I'm coughing as quietly as I can, but it's not working very well. What are people saying to you on the doorstep? I'm guessing that you're out and about talking to people a lot.
Yes, yeah. It's mixed. You know, it depends on what their jobs are and what the age group is, what their concerns are. You know, if you speak to somebody who's, for instance, a prison officer or a fire officer, they're concerned about their pension rights. You know, they put 20, 30 years in. What's going to happen? And to my mind, their rights should be protected.
Just a minute. Oh, you've caught it as well.
Afraid so.
Yeah. have a drink of water.
But to my mind, it's the frontline workers that are being penalised or picked on by the people who work in the private sector. They're looking at these guys thinking they're the ones draining the system with the public sector pensions.
Yeah.
I don't believe that at all. I think we're top heavy. We've got far too many senior civil servants who've come over from across. I don't doubt the qualifications and the enthusiasm, but they're used to dealing with a catchment area of millions.
Yeah.
And the whole island's only got 85.
Yes.
Or maybe less now after the census.
Yeah, sure. But they're still sort of dealing as though they've got millions of people to represent and still got the hierarchy to support that kind of thing. Is that the concern?
That's what I believe, yeah.
Yeah, okay. You say that there's reluctance from some politicians to embrace change. Isn't that a Manx trait? We don't like change.
I think also it's not just a Manx trait. It's as we get older, yeah, we don't like change. It's what's comfortable, but...
But how do you balance things like, you know, people continually tell me that heritage is vitally important, having things like the horse trams, vitally important that we do that. But it's all very old-fashioned, isn't it? And do you not think it's going to be difficult for the island to look like a go-ahead place while we've still got these things?
We are a small island and we expect to grow tourism, but only at TT. There is a limited amount of transport to do that. But our best asset, apart from the stunning scenery and locations, is the heritage of this island.
Yeah.
There is quite a large group of people who will travel all over the British Isles to access railways or piers.
Right. Okay.
You know, it's like some people will go out with vintage cars or, yeah, are like we do with vintage bikes. It's what the passion is for the people who live here.
You say that there's a lot of expertise on the island that could be utilised better. How would you see that working? Because, you know, the problem is that we've got this Manx crab syndrome that people talk about, and I think it's probably fair to talk about it, in that if anybody from the Isle of Man stands up and says, this is what we want to do, immediately they're shot down in flames. So, you know, you can almost understand why politicians get external consultants in and say, right, we're not sure what to do with this, you tell us what to do, and then we've got somebody to blame if people don't like it. I mean, you know, do you think that you can ever encourage local people to get more involved in things like, you know, planning new schemes and things?
Yes, I do. You know, we've met them. There are an awful lot of retired professionals on this island, civil engineers, structural engineers, people who've worked in the industry across, and they're willing to help, but the government dismiss them.
Right, okay.
Because they're not part of an organisation with the latest tick list qualification.
Yes.
And it would be a lot less money. You know, this TT World Series, for example, I know it's been done to death, but Vintage Motorcycle Club was consulted and the TT Marshals Association was consulted, of which I'm a member of both, and they were both told it was a non-starter. They didn't consult with the Manx Motorcycle Club, who have a lot more expertise on it. But my first thought when I heard about it was, so you're going to go and consult around the world with different countries, and the first thing they're going to do is say, well, thank you for giving us the idea.
Yeah.
Now we've withdrawn it. Australia are now consulting with residents round a road racing course.
Right, yeah.
You know,
so we've
thank
given
you,
away
Isle of Man,
silver
for giving us a good idea.
Okay. You say that the vulnerable aren't being supported well enough. How would you pay for the services that you think people need? Because, you know, I think all the candidates recognise the fact that there's not enough money in the system to do all the things that politicians want to do at the moment. So what would you do? Would you try and make more money, save more money, spend it in different ways?
I think this government is hemorrhaging money in the wrong places. And then on the front line, they're going, look at how we've managed to give you this service. My main bugbear is we've got a shortage of nurses, health workers, but we're prepared to pay double for a bank nurse.
All right.
So if we didn't have bank nurses, then those people wouldn't be leaving nursing to go and work on the bank.
Right, yeah.
You know, it's crazy. And then the poor nurse who's employed by the National Health Service is having the responsibility of, because the bank nurses, they just go in, do so many hours, they don't have any responsibility.
Yeah.
But they're getting paid more.
But is that government's job to try and solve that? Because, I mean, I've got no idea, but maybe the bank nurses are being used because they're more flexible. If you find out that you've got an understaffed ward on a Thursday and Friday, you can get somebody in for those 2 days. To employ them 365 days a year is a much bigger commitment. So even though it might cost you a little bit more, it's a bit like you go to a convenience store rather than a supermarket. Yeah. You know, you pay a bit more, but you're paying for the convenience. So isn't that the case, say, with bank nurses?
No, I think we've become too reliant on them. You know, in petrol retail, we work shift work 24/7.
Yeah.
So if somebody couldn't work, you drew somebody in from somewhere else. You didn't just say, oh, I'm going to have to go to an agency and get a worker in just for a few hours. Yeah. It doesn't work like that, because you need somebody there who knows the system of that particular hospital.
So in terms of protecting the vulnerable and giving people a better service, you think that economies can be made with things like
yes,
bank nurses
definitely.
And spent in resources? I know that you're a welfare case officer, aren't you, with the SSAFA. What sort of issues do you see in the community on that front?
I've had 3 cases in the last 12 months where I was brought in because the gas had been cut off.
Right.
And they hadn't been to the food bank. They hadn't been anywhere because they were too proud to ask for help.
This is former servicemen and women?
Yeah. But it isn't just them. I've been brought in to deal with the ex-servicemen, but it's going on in the community. People, because it's not happening to them, they don't recognise it exists. I think this government has become too reliant on third sector workers,
yeah.
which they are now, because I'm also on the Live at Home Scheme Committee for Douglas, and we are struggling for volunteers. Because there's still only 85,000 people on this island. And, you know, there's a working population, a retired population, and you've got to draw your volunteers from there.
Yeah. Isn't that one of those facts of life, though, and it must be frustrating if you're a politician, that people only do become interested in certain issues if it affects them directly? You know, do you think that when you're talking to people about the election, enough people are looking at the bigger picture about the Isle of Man as a whole, or are they only concerned about the issues that directly affect them?
The younger ones are more interested in the things that affect them, because obviously they're the working population. More water.
It's like a sick ward, isn't it? It's like a chest ward, isn't it? I do apologise, listeners. We're doing our best under difficult circumstances.
That's so, the thread, then.
We're talking about young people.
Yeah. I'm not saying all young people don't see the bigger picture. Some of them have some ideas. But their main motivation when they're younger is providing for their families, making sure the mortgage is paid, and having a good, steady job. When you get older, you've come into semi-retirement or retirement, and you're sat there looking at, but we paid him for that reason,
yeah.
And now you're saying it's not going to happen. And it's creating a them and us society where the young people think the older people are holding them back.
Right.
And they don't seem to realise that years ago, the older people that are now were the younger people they supported.
Okay. You're unhappy that rate reform hasn't been progressed. Should that be a priority? And if so, why?
I believe so. I mean, to have properties out in the country that were once farmhouses and don't have the land anymore, they're not run as farms, being rated still as a farmhouse because you were helping the farmers out, is totally unacceptable. But also, we have a huge problem with derelict buildings, particularly in the capital, but they are spread around the island. And a lot of these buildings, they can't find who owns them because somebody died.
Yeah.
So it was inherited by a family across, either in the UK or Ireland, and then they died. And somebody halfway around the other side of the world owns the property. But they're not interested in coming here because it's going to cost them more. than the property's worth.
So what do we do in cases like that? Do we write to them and say, right, this is what's going to happen, it's going to be sold off, and if there's anything left over after the cost, you might get it, you might not?
I know some of our officers on council have struggled with this, trying to find who the actual owner is. But to my mind, if there was a rate set after, say, for instance, a year of it being empty, then that would be a deterrent. You've got to give them a year. But also, if you've had a property that's been empty 10, 20 years or more, I don't believe the compulsory purchase order would work, because that would mean government taking more money out of our taxes. But maybe a compulsory sales order, where you sell the building, remove from the price that you get for it, the cost of legal fees, and put it in a trust till somebody comes along.
Do you think it's a significant issue, though? Do you think there are enough derelict buildings that we need to do something about it?
Yes, there are. Okay. It is always a huge contention in council.
And as far as rates are concerned, what, one all-island rates amount, percentage or whatever?
Well, each commissioner, a set of commissioners and the council, set the rates for the services they provide. What we're asking for is that the rateable value of these buildings was brought up to date.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you've got somebody living just outside the boundary of Douglas, using all Douglas's facilities, not paying to Douglas.
Yes.
You know, I don't object to paying the rates I pay living in Douglas, because I can see the services that they're supplying. But the people on the outside are not paying towards it, but they're using it.
Well, that was one of the arguments about the horse trams, of course, wasn't it?
Yeah.
The Douglas ratepayers were paying for it and everybody was getting the value from it.
Yeah. I mean, the horse trams, you know, it was a service when it was first introduced for the Victorians, but it isn't a service for the Douglas residents. We don't think, I'll just nip on the horse tram to get to the shops. It doesn't work like that.
All right. Douglas Council's due to reduce its number of members in 3 or 4 years, 2020, I think. Should Tynwald be reformed in the same
Certainly.
Way? Certainly. In what way? What would you do?
I think they need to reduce the members, I know.
Number of MHKs?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, you might be talking yourself out of a job here.
Unfortunately, I don't like turkey, so I'm happy to vote for Christmas. But I also believe that LegCo, you know, in council on our Housing, Pension and Standards Committee, we have an independent member, and it goes out like a job application, and they have to fit certain criteria and qualifications. The candidates come for interview and the committee sit on the panel, and they're asked about 7 or 8 questions. Each committee member rates each candidate on each question out of 5.
Yeah.
And the one who gets the maximum points is the one appointed. We've got people in LegCo who've been voted in by their mates.
Yes.
I'm not saying some of them in there aren't good at the job, but that isn't acceptable in the modern world.
All right, what about the election of Chief Minister then? Because that follows naturally on from that, doesn't it? Who should vote for the Chief Minister? Should it be the public? Should it be the MHK? Should it be all of Tynwald?
I believe it should be the MHKs are representing their public, their constituents. So you've voted your MHK in to represent your thoughts. There is nothing stopping the constituents bombarding their MHK and saying, look, this is who we've seen has been elected. This is who we'd like you to put your vote for and discuss it with your constituents. You know, there doesn't seem to be any communication going on.
Well, what would you do to improve that if you were elected? Because, you know, it strikes me that if you're a newly elected MHK, your hands are fairly full, you're on a very steep learning curve. How much time can you actually spend then talking to your constituents about things?
I only found out a few weeks back that they only worked one day a week. I was gobsmacked.
MHKs?
Yeah. I work every day for council and I don't get paid.
Right, okay.
I think it depends how committed you are. If
they're a member of a department, then they'll work more than one day a week. So we're just talking about backbenchers, yeah?
Yeah, but I mean, if you're committed enough, you will do your research and your homework.
Okay.
Which is what I do on council.
What do you think would help to strengthen the island's economy? Where have we got big gains to make, do you think?
I think we're ignoring the specialist engineering, the niche companies.
Things like the aerospace cluster.
Yeah, definitely. You know, we have a lot of expertise on this island and the government seems to be ignoring them for bringing, you know, corporate multinational companies over here, paying them out of this £50 million DED fund because they're going to employ people. But you're not going to make money out of that.
All right. So what, you think that that money ought to be used to get somebody like Triumph Motorcycles to set up a factory here, because there's nothing to stop people manufacturing things like motorbikes, say, here?
There isn't, but we just don't have the working population that has the expertise in that area.
Isn't it a case of build it and they'll come? I mean, you can, you know, initially tool it with people from off-island, maybe, and develop local skills as you need to.
Well, I've always believed, and so have quite a lot of the older generation, that the way to go on the island for regeneration, you know, the green bit, was tidal power.
Right.
But we were told 12 years ago, oh, no, it's going to be too expensive. It turns out a few years later they got the figures wrong. So, you know, the islands off the coast of North Scotland are developing it. Stranford Locks had it for quite some years.
But
we could draw on that.
Isn't that one of those things, though, that we don't really want to pay a premium to be an early adopter? I mean, it is still new technology, tidal power, more so than wind power. So shouldn't we wait until other people have been through the boom or bust exercise and then get into it at that stage?
Probably, but you can leave it too late and then you're left out.
OK. And isn't also the problem the fact that we've got to repay the MEA loan somehow and alternative sources of energy might not be terribly welcomed by government?
Well, we are paying the MEA loan via the sewerage tax.
Right. So you obviously object to these, I think you call them stealth taxes,
yes,
don't you?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
You know, why should an elderly person living in a house they've lived in, some rent, some have bought, but they've lived in it for a long time, they're building rich, cash poor, and they are being expected to pay a sewerage tax comparative with the rateable value of the property. Across, before we moved over here, they introduced the sewerage tax on the back of water meters. For some reason, we're not doing that over here.
I think people have said it's too expensive to do it.
No, they're going to lose money.
Right.
Whereas we lived in West Yorkshire, and Yorkshire Water Authority was quite militant on this, and they were trying to get people. They had it was brought in when the droughts were going on over there, and what they did, they put water meters in, and it showed up the leaks on the properties,
right, yeah.
And then they sent, you know, letters threatening legal action. My mother-in-law, I moved in with her just before we moved over here, and she went on a water meter, and with three of us living in the house, having a couple of baths a day, her water rates were reduced by 2/3.
Right, okay.
I've inquired about it over here and been told that you would pay the higher rate, whether it's the rates or the water meter.
We're running short on time, but I've got to ask you, what's your stance on the refurbishment of Douglas Promenade and the horse tram? Should they stay as a government thing, or should they revert back to the council or
They will definitely not go back to council. It is part of Heritage Rail Network, as we've always believed. The farce with the promenade, it leaves you speechless some days. You've spent £1 million you've owned up to, so we know there's a lot more to it. My question to the minister over a year ago is, why are we looking at replacing the infrastructure of the roadway when we haven't secured the infrastructure of the seawall?
Right.
You know, it all follows. But these pie-in-the-sky schemes to make Douglas Promenade look like any other town in the UK. My son lives in Hemel Hempstead, and the Chinese granite there and the cultural bits. You know, this is a main arterial route to the north of the island when the mountain roads closed, and they want traffic calming measures. They want to turn Lock Promenade into a car park.
All right.
With Chevron parking on both sides. I get road rage with Chevron parking as a passenger.
All right. Many people that we've been talking to have mentioned tourism as an area that we can actually start to make more money or get more out of our assets.
Yeah.
How do you think that that could be expanded, if at all?
Tourism, at the moment, there is a lot of Manx people and visitors and people who've moved over to live. Whenever you go across, you sell the island. I don't believe the government are doing enough in the right areas. They're promoting the TT,
right,
but we can't get any more visitors over because of the travel links.
So speculate to accumulate a bit more, maybe.
Yes.
All right.
You know, there's still only so many hotels.
All right. We're pretty much out of time, but why should the people of Douglas North vote for Karen Angela?
Because I'm passionate about representing the electorate, not only for the constituents. I'm not, you know, going to be going round to have the hedges cut. I'm representing them and their views in government.
All right. Candidate for Douglas North, Karen Angela, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, Stu.
Keep up to date with the latest House of Keys general election 2016 coverage on manxradio.com.